The fact remains that Nigerians want solutions to their problem in real time, and they are exploring innovations like Bitcoin and USDT for faster transaction process. I always tell people, in Africa, it means more of medium of exchange and utility for us than just keep holding and building generational wealth. Although people want to build generational wealth, but as well, they want solutions to their financial problem in real time.
All right, everybody, welcome back. We are here today with our first guest from Nigeria. We have Heritage Faladon with us today. He wears many hats. From what I understand, this is true of many people in Nigeria. They often wear many hats. They're very entrepreneurial. He's a software engineer. He's the owner of DigiOats. He's a contributor to Bitcoin Magazine, and he hosts the Bitcoin in Nigeria podcast. So, like I've said many times, we love to have Renaissance people on like Heritage here with us today. So Heritage, please let me hand the mic over to you. Please let the audience know what I might have missed there and give us a little bit of background on yourself.
Well, thanks, Frank. I mean, you did justice to the introduction, but I would just be adding more to your point and then making everyone on this program understand who your guest is. So it's nice connecting with this program. I'm Heritage Faladun by name, Eric Diego on all social media platforms, including Nostri. And yes, I'm a Bitcoin consultant. I mean, I do a lot of things, just as Frank has said, but my work extensively in regards to enabling Bitcoin adoption through intensive education and then solving remittance problems through Bitcoin and stablecoin, fostering and providing liquidity for businesses, and as well as writing and contributing to Bitcoin vocals media outlets at my free time. I contribute to Bitcoin Magazine as well as Black Bitcoin Billionaire. I'm a moderator on the platform. So it revolves around extensive work around Bitcoin and getting the innovation on board for people. I mean, getting people acquainted with it. So that's briefly who Heritage is, and it's nice to be on your show today. I wish we chew a lot of matter down the knob, actually.
But thank you so much. I'm amazed by all that you do, and it's a pleasure to have you on here. I want to zoom out a little bit before we focus on exactly what it is that you do in more detail. And I just want to try to give the audience somewhat of an understanding of what the macroeconomic situation in Nigeria looks like. So what is currently happening in Nigeria? How are people getting by? From what I read, there's a notable amount of inflation. How is this affecting people? How are they coping with it?
I mean, the inflation amount is actually nowhere close to being notable. I mean, notable not in the positive aspect, but negatively. We see about a minus 55% decrease in purchasing power of Naira over the last 365 days. And it's presently about 28.3% inflation, not just ordinary double-digit inflation. We see the Naira losing 5 Naira to 20 Naira margin in the black market, presently exchanging for 1,402 Naira to a dollar, the black market rate, while we have the central bank rate and the APS bank's rate still sitting at 1,000 to 980 Naira to a dollar. So it's extremely ridiculous in terms of inflation, and I feel Nigerians are eager and monitoring the market changes and reflection in prices in order to opt for solutions that could actually let them boycott inflation. So, yes, that's going to be my response to your question, Frank.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I like that term, boycott inflation. I think that's a really good way to put it. I know that from what I read, your government was not very happy about people trying to boycott inflation as they tried to ban Bitcoin, stablecoins, other crypto assets. And in response, from what I read, Nigeria became, I think, the biggest P2P trading country in Africa, one of the biggest P2P trading countries in the world. So what did that look like? So I think it was 2 years ago when the government sort of cracked down, or the government and the central bank cracked down on crypto in general, and Nigerian people just said, essentially, no, we're going to trade this P2P and we're going to use it how we want to use it. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that looked like?
Yes. Actually, the situation was that there's actually change in government, giving a clear elaboration on what you asked just now. I said something initially about remittance and offering liquidity for businesses. The inflow of dollars into Nigeria and some African countries is very huge in terms of importation, in terms of paying for different fees like settling aviation companies and all of that, including the oil firms and a lot of importing related businesses. So the remittance process keep increasing, and the fastest way for all this remittance process was through normal conventional wire transfers, and then going through the route of using the black market rate or the conventional bank rates. But things keep getting difficult for Nigerians, and they need to find solutions and alternatives. So they keep discovering stuff like stable coins, keep discovering stuff like Bitcoin. As time keeps going on, as at then, that's 2019, 2020, 2021, we start seeing changes in remittance approach and processing format. People now prefer using stable coins, Bitcoin, for their remittance processes as at then. And the government noticed this. That is, they noticed it on their remittance data that there is decrease in terms of remittance going through the traditional financial banking system. And there's a bit of remittance still coming into the country, both off-ramp and on-ramp. So they discovered there is more trust and more utility for Bitcoin and stable coins because of the users and citizens' interest in it, in solving their business transactions and all. So when this happened, the government of then started implementing policies to make sure they restrict businesses and confine them with the existing mode of remittance. That led to some policies that restrict banks from interfacing and trading, offering cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin, USDT payments to their customers. It restricted Nigerians from using their debit card to make purchases higher than a particular percent. So there were a lot of restrictions, but these restrictions necessitate more interest in P2P market. That's the Bitcoin peer-to-peer market, the stable coins peer-to-peer market on exchanges. That was when we start seeing the data of Nigerians coming up with more involvement in Bitcoin and stable coins. That's post 2021, late 2021 and early 2022. That particular situation skyrocketed Nigeria into the top three position in terms of trading and utility of this asset in the world. I think it was third to China and the United States as at then. And as we speak, there are still policies coming out from this recent government, which tend to be blockchain friendly in comparison with the previous government. The previous government keeps coming with policies, restrictions to enable the traditional mode of transactions, while the recent government, as it's stated, have been able to reverse some of the restrictive policies we have before. And this alone has been encouraging blockchain adoption, not Bitcoin specifically. So there are needs for government to understand and regulate and then come with policies to like make digital currency favorable in this jurisdiction. And we've been witnessing those changes. But to your point, the fact remains that Nigerians want solutions to their problem in real time, and they are exploring innovations like Bitcoin and USDT for faster transaction process. I always tell people, in Africa, it means more of medium of exchange and utility for us than just keep holding and building generational wealth. Although people want to build generational wealth, but as well, they want solutions to their financial problem in real time. So I feel Bitcoin and USDT is doing that. And that's an intensive explanation to your question, Frank.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. So you just mentioned, just a quick response to that. I was going to say, in terms of stable coins, do people trust USDT the most? USDT, for everyone listening, would be Tether. Would that be the stable coin of preference?
Actually, I mean, that there is data out there to verify all the facts. USDT, in terms of boycotting volatility, it's what most of the market players trust in Africa. I mean, there are other stable coins as there are other self-acclaimed stable coins as well, because generally all stable coins are not stable because we know they are pegged with US dollar. But in a very high inflationary environment like that of Nigeria, you see the US dollar is actually doing better than the Naira. So they prefer to like boycott the volatility on Bitcoin, because most of them are short-term traders who just want to like, who just need solutions to remittance problems. So at times they trust USDT for boycotting volatility, and that's Tether. You're right.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. Another question I had, so I think it was either late 2021, I think, or early 22, the government there tried to roll out one of the first CBDCs, which was called the eNaira. For those listening who don't know what a CBDC is, it's short for Central Bank Digital Currency. And this is a very hot issue, or this will be a very hot issue, in that a central bank digital currency gives the central bank complete control over your monetary life. They can freeze your account more easily. They can offer you money that maybe expires in a certain time frame. Like if you don't use this money in 3 months, it disappears. So there's a lot of dangers around CBDCs. And it seems like Nigerian people knew this. And I don't know if it was intuitively or there was just a mistrust for certain systems. But what was that process like when the government or the central bank tried to roll out CBDCs? And from what I read, the Nigerian people largely did not support them or use them. Is that true?
Yeah, very, very true. I mean, but I will put more explanation to your opinion, actually. Nigerian government, the previous government of President Muhammadu Buhari, introduced the eNaira, which is a concept of digitalizing the existing fiat currency, trying to like reduce the cash flow and introduce a lot of capital control, as well as create more in terms in the explanation regarding the merits they mentioned about the introduction of the stable coins, like creating fastest way for folks to like interface with Naira. That was the aim. But looking at the concept of what it entails technically, we understand that it's more like a lot of restrictions and a lot of censorship on individuals using such currencies. For instance, there was cash withdrawal limit before and during the phase of the eNaira promotion and publicity stunt. So the eNaira was introduced. It was stated that the traditional banks should integrate it with their system. But the question remains, what's the total number of token issued? What's like backing this stablecoin up. It's been pegged with Naira, which is still inflationary. And I said something about Nigerians. Nigerians always question innovation, questioning innovation in the sense that what is this technology or innovation going to be doing for us? What are the problems we are facing on ground? And is this technology really addressing such problem? Problems like inflation, right? Problems like difficulty in accessing foreign exchange and difficulties in making seamless remittance transactions, cross-border transactions. And when you look at the optimization on this stable coin, is it solving those problems? No, it's not. And Nigerians see, if this is not solving the problem that we are going through right now, then this is not the right time for us to adopt it, because there are problems around people doesn't have access to like electricity, people doesn't have access to like smartphones, and making and confining all these people to like strictly to a digital currency, why not solving existing basic problems on ground makes everything difficult. So as at then, the adoption level on e-Naira was 0.36%. That's like a very low population of the country adopting it, and it's more like a failure from start. And this present government, it's working on what we call consortium stablecoin. That's CNGN. It's more like an improvement phase in comparison to e-Naira. So instead of the central bank controlling it, it's giving the Apex Bank, that is the traditional and commercial banks, to have that particular token as consortium. They be the consortium of the token. They make sure the processes are it's transparent, and they have their ledger-based structures for it. That's like a framework for the new stablecoin and the new policy regarding stablecoin optimization in Nigeria. And when we look at this, I was speaking with some journalists, and I tell them, will this consortium NGN enable ease of transaction? Yes, in some process where the mobile and traditional transaction process is very, very difficult. But will this consortium NGN solve inflation problem? No. Is inflation problem important to our citizens right now? Yes, because every Nigerians out there are literally clamoring on price changes in basic commodities they keep purchasing on daily basis. And this as a result of high demand for the United States dollars and low demand for the Nigerian Naira. And what's necessitating this? We are literally a country importing more than exporting. So there are a lot of economic factors influencing the Nigerian economy. And when we look at it, the stable coins are actually not solving those problems outrightly. And to your point, that's one of the major reasons and core factors why Nigerians have not been adopting it. And I feel innovation solving their problem, like Bitcoin, like stable coins, has consistently been receiving adoption. Why others who are probably in the West or the mainstream media might feel, oh, there's huge adoption in Nigeria. Nigerians still feel that there's a lot to be done in terms of getting people on board into these currencies. Because I'm speaking on your program today. By the next time you'll be hearing this program or probably taking another guest, the exchange rate of Naira won't be the same. It would have depreciated by a value of 5 to 20 Naira in the face of few days. That's what we've been witnessing. I mean, and that's my response and detailed answer to your question, Frank.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. No, that was amazing and very thorough. I appreciate that. I think it's really good for people to hear this, maybe people who are from around where I live here in New York or in the United States, to understand how wildly some of the exchange rates for other currencies around the world fluctuate on a daily basis. And we're dealing with inflation here in the United States to degrees that we have not seen it in maybe 50 years. And it hits us in different ways. It definitely has impacted food prices. It's absolutely impacted housing prices, but it's really, really impacted things like the cost of healthcare or the cost of getting an education. These things are just basically becoming unattainable, or especially the education part, becoming unattainable for people who are just in the middle class. You know, I think to go to a private school right now, a private college, costs almost $300,000 US for, you know, for 4 years. So it's pretty insane what's happening right now. And it, part of the reason I do this podcast is to bring some perspective to people, that it's even crazier in other parts of the world. One of these parts of the world being Nigeria. That level of exchange rate fluctuation is absolutely wild. So to go back to your role in this, in Nigeria, in the Bitcoin community, and also I'll say crypto in the sense that I'm including stable coins in this conversation. What is your role? How did you get involved? Why did you decide to start doing what it is you do? You wear many hats. You could tell us about each of them. And how is it going? Is it easy educating people? Is it difficult? What sorts of roadblocks, what sorts of hurdles do you face in the process?
Yeah, actually, I would say there are a lot of challenges, and there have been progress as well. My involvement into the ecosystem comes from a place of seeing possibilities, taking action, and enabling progress. Reason is there are existing problems that I have been able to figure out, and I believe the best way to give back to the community and actually create impact and value is solving those problems uniquely with existing innovations that can be trusted, decentralized innovations like Bitcoin. So I actually don't know the core concept of Bitcoin initially. I was just so curious about finance and looking for solutions to financial problems. So I think I stumbled on cryptocurrency when I was in uni. I'm a computer science graduate, and I was interfacing with a lot of programming languages, doing a bit of hardware coding then with Arduino, C++, then later transitioning into web development and mobile development with that and Flutter. But towards my final year in uni, I keep gaining more interest in finance. So with my technical knowledge with programming, I was able to combine tech and finance together. I feel that introduced the concept of blockchain to me. I have friends who are also working freelance jobs who are willing to receive payments as at then, and they had issues with payment options. There was PayPal for payments then, but then PayPal wasn't accessible in Nigeria, and the client was offering the option of Bitcoin. So my friend was like, oh, you can receive the payment with Bitcoin. That was when I interfaced with Bitcoin and solving problem in terms of receiving payment. So going forward, I learned about cryptocurrency generally. So I think I was just playing with it on exchanges, buying and holding. I also learned the hard way, because during my process of keeping these coins on exchanges, I got scammed when I was trying to run an off-ramp process with Ethereum on a particular application as at then. And I think events and situations keep shaping my experience and keeps increasing my growth overall. So when I lost money through the P2P market, I was so surprised, wow. So this, I can be scammed with this technology, and I feel I'm extremely technical. No, I have to understand it better. So I keep digging deep. I think I found Black Bitcoin Billionaires, them, the one led by Isaiah Jackson and Lama Wilson. Yep. It's they have in United States. So I found them. I joined the club. I laid my hands on a lot of research works regarding Bitcoin. And my consistent contribution in the club improved my knowledge and interest about Bitcoin and blockchain, as well as financial technology generally. Then I became a moderator on their platform in 2021/2022. Then I discovered that with this knowledge and a little, I would say I know about Bitcoin, because Bitcoin is voracious and it's a rabbit hole. You keep learning and learning on daily basis. I told myself, then there is an information gap that needs to be bridged back home, because in Nigeria, a lot of folks understand Bitcoin for transactional purposes, not for the technical aspect of it, not for the for the core values it really offers. So I created a platform, a startup called Digiot, basically to like give back to the community then. So running the startups also expand my knowledge about startup, about creating companies and all of that, because I realized you have to generate profits as you give back to the community, because it's not an NGO. So I focused my energy into like giving back to the community through our education process, and then optimizing our profit process with liquidity provision and all. So my involvement in Bitcoin ecosystem has been impact driven and solution focused, as well as running different consultancy sections for people to actually get themselves acquainted with Bitcoin or transition their business and processes with Bitcoin or change their unit of account to Bitcoin. So that's all we've been doing. And to give out more information, I write on Bitcoin Magazine, do a lot of research around mining and the available renewable energy in our continent to like cater for that. So it's been extensive work. It's been for Africans by African. It's been a way of offering solutions and doing the needful for our people. Yeah.
Amazing. What I love about your story is it reminds me of some other people's story in the space, and that is that you have a deep willingness to learn. A lot of people get into this space, and because this technology, or let's say this sort of, the way you put it was perfect, sort of this merger between money and technology, what the Bitcoin blockchain is, or maybe blockchain more broadly, it's new to everyone. You know, I mean, it's Bitcoin has only been around for 15 years. The first 5 years or so, not many people were into it. It's only been the last maybe 5 years or so that, you know, a lot of people are waking up to what this is. They're seeing that it's sort of leaving the phase of being an experiment, and now it's sort of becoming, at least Bitcoin is now a mainstream asset. A company like Circle in the United States that issues the stablecoin USDC is about to go public. So, you know, in terms of stablecoins, Bitcoin, these are now just sort of part of the financial infrastructure. I wouldn't even say that they're alternative assets, to be honest. I think they're just becoming mainstream assets. So, but it takes a lot of learning, like you said, to not just sort of understand that with something like Bitcoin, the number goes up, to actually understand the technology and what the value proposition is. Non-censorable money, money that can't be, that's immune to debasement, that can't be inflated away, the value can't be inflated away. These things are really important. They're difficult to understand. And even if you understand them conceptually, when you start doing the work that you do, you have to have a very, very deep technical understanding of them as well, especially if you're going to be doing something like you do, providing liquidity. You have to make sure you don't make any big mistakes. Obviously, your business will get hurt or other people may get hurt. Can you actually, I'm curious, I want to go back to that. I've read that a few times. So you have this service that provides liquidity in Bitcoin to people. Can you explain how that works a little bit, though? Is it like, is it an over-the-counter desk, meaning you just... you're just getting Bitcoin to people for cash, or is it run like a traditional exchange?
Yes, it's actually an over-the-counter exchange for okay. bulk transactions, basically business to business. This is how it works. The normal traditional banks approach is making sure you follow the AML principles, like anti-money laundering principles, by running a proper KYC with such businesses and knowing the source of funds, the purpose of transactions. When that is done during the onboarding process for our liquidity transaction techniques, then we proceed to like running transactions with these businesses For instance, businesses who are interested in making offshore or onshore payments for procurements or settling international clients, then we get fiat currencies from them. We move these fiat currencies into Bitcoin or stable coins, depending on the type of transactions requested by our clients. And then we are able to like off-ramp these cryptocurrencies, which we must have changed from a particular country fiat currency to another country, while paying directly to only business accounts, because it's a solution for business to business. So we've been doing this manually for some times while we are optimizing our operations with automated APIs that can extensively attend to clients at multiple range. So I feel this is essential to the traditional problems we have regarding remittance in Africa, Nigeria to be precise, and some other countries like South Africa, Egypt, Ghana, and Kenya as well. So these countries, there's a lot of inflow and outflow of currencies coming in, but you tend to understand that there are numerous currencies in Africa that doesn't even interface with each other. They interface with US dollars before interfacing with themselves. So instead of making US dollar the third party in this, we are making a decentralized currency, Bitcoin, the solution to like foster such transactions. And since it is transaction for a KYC business, that is a business that has been registered and that must have passed through the anti-money laundering scrutinizations by our regulator, then we run transactions for them. So we now see clients and customers, instead of waiting for 3 days for the fastest wire transfer, we see them getting their payment reflection at worst case scenario within a day. So that's like 12 hours to 24 hours for bulk transactions, and instant reflections for a minimum range of transactions around $5,000 to $10,000dollars. So that's how it works. And that's me responding to your liquidity question. The Bitcoin education question, I mean, man, Bitcoin education is dependent on the community and jurisdiction you are trying to educate. You have to educate them in an existing way or concept they already resonate with. So if it's a community who listen to radio very well, the best approach to like pushing events to them will be through radios or probably through community event festival and all. So we've been leveraging that approach for our education process too by running consistent quarterly meetups in partnership with companies like Trezor Academy Africa. They are running programs with us, as well as our yearly and quarterly quart programs. So this has been helpful for us in terms of education. So this a clear explanation of what DigiOath does, what Neona Synergy does in terms of liquidity and Bitcoin education. I feel that must have been able to do justice to your question, Frank.
Yeah, that you did. You did much justice to the question for sure. Thank you for being so thorough. I appreciate it. I love, from what I hear a lot when I speak with people, I would say it's all over Africa. In particular Africa, though, there's a lot of talking about meeting people where they are, meaning you have to sort of understand where people are coming from, what their cognitive framework is, and then saying, okay, how can I now explain this new technology to them in a framework or in a way that they're going to understand? And I spent 12 years teaching, and I also have part of my master's degree in doing counseling work for people. And a lot of that work, it's obviously meeting people where they are as well. You can come here and start talking about Bitcoin up here, and you know, like how much you know about it and blah, 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 and everything it can do theoretically, but that's not going to help people. You have to come down to the level, or not come down to, just meet people on the level that they're at and try to explain it to them, because it's the role that in a lot of ways we all have to play if we do want this network to grow. And there's value in the network growing for us. The more the network grows, the more valuable the network becomes. So we sort of, I don't know if this is the perfect way to say it, but we sort of like owe it to the network to try to meet people where they're at if we want this network to grow and we want more people to benefit from it, including ourselves to benefit more from it. Another dimension of Bitcoin in Nigeria that you've written about is Bitcoin mining in Nigeria. And this is right now, I think, a very popular topic in Africa in general. You have organizations like Gridless who are doing amazing work with Bitcoin mining in Africa. You talked about how good this could be in Nigeria because you have ample sunlight, you have ample hydroelectric power. Since you wrote this piece for Bitcoin Magazine on mining in Nigeria, has anything changed? And are you involved in mining at all in Nigeria?
Yes, when it comes to like Bitcoin mining in Nigeria, since I wrote the article, I feel we've witnessed tremendous change. But as Nigerians, we are always optimistic and willing to like achieve higher heights. I would say we have existing mining operations being run by Trojan Mining at the northern part of the country. There are private mining operations in Nigeria as well, in places like the Federal Capital Territory and some locations in Lagos. And to that, after writing the piece was to give a clear overview about the renewable energy options available in Nigeria and other African countries like Ethiopia, Kenya, in terms of exploring this renewable energy to like mine Bitcoin, generate incentive for the community, and as well electrify those communities who don't have electricity. So just as you've said, we have about 93,000 kilowatts of untapped electricity in Nigeria. We have a lot of flare gas options as well from the oil and gas company. So what we are doing is to like be able to make this data available for institutional and private investors who are willing to like explore the market, as well as give them the regulatory perspective available to like run such operation specifically in Nigeria. And when we look at the existing regulatory concept available, the NERC, that's the Electricity Commission, NEC in Nigeria, has been able to like come up with an encouraging regulation that enables individual to like even generate up to 1 megawatt of electricity privately. That's like a minute quantity for you to like run your mining operation as a private individual. And when we are looking at the institutional level, they have been able to like make sure they have been able to make licensing and giving data centers, or people are willing to like generate such amount of electricity, the license to operate while following the proper procedure. So I feel this is great for Nigeria, and it's a step in the right direction. And as we speak, I always engage in a lot of journey, like going to the eastern part of the country where there's oil reserves and different refineries to actually explore the available flare gases and corroborate the statistics we have online. So with this, we've seen investors showing interest. We've seen programs like the Gridless Seed Foundation program coming up during the African Bitcoin Conference, trying to like bring more Africans together, as well as make opportunities and options, data and information available for investors who are willing to like explore this business in Africa, because there's actually cheap electricity in Nigeria, there's cheap electricity in Ethiopia, there's cheap electricity in Ghana as well, in comparison to what we have in some other countries like the United States and some other European countries. We have about 0.031 kilowatt per hour USD worth of electricity. So that's like for you to buy, for you pay about 0.31 cents for a kilowatt per hour. So that's how accessible the electricity rates are. And I also implore everyone to read out that article as well. I make sure it's my pinned tweet, although there's an update on it as well, highlighting the regulation from the government recently. So that's like the second version of it. And I think I've been able to like put that tax upon myself and as Bitcoiners, for us to like be able to like provide updates and insightful information for people to progress and have the ecosystem grow. It's obvious mining is capital intensive, and with the right information, the right security metrics, the right access to like renewable energy options, which will make the cost operation of running a mining infrastructure profitable regarding to the incentives that will be generated, as well as the environment. I mean, it's not extremely hot in Nigeria. There are parts like jobs that are very, very accessible in terms of weather, and also some parts at the eastern part. So these are places that also have renewable energy options, hydro, solar, and all of that. But most importantly, hydro has been the one we've been exploring. And to myself, seeing if I'm mining or not, I'm not mining on an institutional level, but I try as much as possible on Spaces to say I don't have any Bitcoin, I don't run any mining stores and all, I'm just a Bitcoiner, but then I don't mine on an institutional level. I do a lot with Bitcoin, and mining is part of what I do. So let's put it that way. Cool. Thanks, Frank. And this is my response to your question.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you. There's one part that I want to go back to a little bit. I actually just heard someone explain this to me, and I want to give you an opportunity to explain it to the audience as well. A lot of people in the United States, I think globally, especially in developed countries, think that Bitcoin mining is a waste of energy. So they think, well, a lot of these people obviously don't like Bitcoin to begin with, but they think, well, it's not helping anyone, and we're already living in a world where we're dealing with environmental degradation and global warming. Why should we be plugging in all of this equipment, wasting all of this energy to mine Bitcoin? Now, for reference, I think Bitcoin mining uses like less than half of 1% of the world's energy or something like that. It's not as much energy as some would like to have you believe. Obviously, many of us believe that it's not a waste of energy, that we believe in the value of Bitcoin. So we believe that it's energy being put to good use. It's securing a network. But the other thing that I've recently learned is that, and I'm learning more about this, is how Bitcoin uses stranded energy. So especially in rural areas of Africa, where you have people producing electricity, if these producers have extra electricity, that electricity can then be used to monetize, it can be monetized with Bitcoin. So is this happening in Nigeria? Like you said, so mining can actually lead to bringing electricity to rural areas. I think you said something to that effect in your last response. Is something like this happening? And again, to give a little bit more context there, it's bringing electricity to these areas in that the electricity producers in these areas, if they can make money, maybe in a partnership with a mining agent, a mining company, turning their excess electricity into money, into Bitcoin, then they can obviously maybe provide electricity at a cheaper rate or provide electricity to more people in that region of the country. So is there any of this happening in Nigeria?
Exactly. I mean, when you are talking about this, I actually tell people that they would always interface with Bitcoin based on the solution it's solving in their jurisdiction, actually. And it's better for us not to always be opinionated, but be open to learn and understand from different features and from different locations and how they interface with Bitcoin. For instance, when people say Bitcoin mining is not solving any problem, I will tell them they should check out the Virunga Park in Congo, where the people in Congo are actually shut out of electricity. But due to Bitcoin mining operations and the operation at the Virunga Park, it brings back this park, which is a reserve park for wildlife, back in Congo. And that's a work done by BBGS service, by Sebastian. So these are verifiable facts. And speaking to Nigeria as well, it comes to a point whereby the solution we are exploring is something I don't want to like intensively elaborate on, but I'm going to talk about it now. There are oil and gas companies that have a lot of flare gases that can be explored and refined to like power and provide electricity to mine Bitcoin, when this excess electricity will definitely be shared to the community as incentive. Why the oil and gas company keeps making money from what should have been waste for them, what should have been pollution and issues to the climate itself. And these things are coming as resources that would generate more income through Bitcoin mining, as well as impact citizens' life through consistent access to electricity and reconnecting them back to the world at large. So these are the opportunities and merits that we can see that's happening regarding to Bitcoin mining in Africa. And talking about this, you tend to feel that these solutions are not just like the existing conventional ways. Most Bitcoin critics come up with stuff like, oh, no, they are taking a lot of electricity until Bitcoin gets to about 54 or 57% renewable energy mining strength. That's when they are satisfied that Bitcoin mining operation is good. I would actually tell you, mining Bitcoin means saving humanity, because you are actually enabling proof of work while you are simultaneously offering solutions to people on ground. Like, they now have access to electricity, cheap electricity for that matter. You are actually curbing climate issues, degradation that must have been caused by these excessive gases. And the people in this community will be getting life. It's not just contemplation. It's what we've seen reflective in places like Virunga in Congo. It's what we've seen reflective in places where we have Trojan mining operating. It's what we see that we still keep reflecting in other mining operations that will be coming up at the eastern part of the country and the northern part of Nigeria. So this something our Western audience should take time to like understand the concept of how this innovation works for different race and ethnic group in different jurisdictions, rather than being skeptical. I always say ignorance is Bitcoin's greatest enemy. When you scrutinize and look for information, you get it, and you'll be able to like pick out the right information. So with this, I would say, man, Bitcoin mining is of utmost importance to Africa, and it's something we keep welcoming. With time, it will be extremely obvious.
Yeah, that was
for the critics.
Yeah, perfect overview. Thank you. I sincerely appreciate it. I feel like I have a much better idea of the situation in Nigeria regarding Bitcoin, stable coins and your role in it. So thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. I want to just open the floor to you to share anything else you'd like to share about yourself, or, and also please just direct the audience to where they can follow you on LinkedIn, Twitter, Noster, or wherever you'd like to share in terms of social media.
Yes, thanks, Frank. I'm a Gen Z guy. I'm so young, but then I'm not on TikTok. I'm not on Snapchat. I'm on Nostri. I'm on Twitter. And I'm on LinkedIn. Heritage Faladun on non-social media platform. Eli Diego on Twitter, Nostri, and Instagram. My pub key is on my profile. And pub, you can see that. And follow me on Nostri. Regarding my words, I'm just going to give our audience explanation about the projects we're working on and what should be expected of us in 2024. When I say us, I mean talking generally for my team at DG Oats now and extensive work at Neona Synergy in terms of providing liquidity. So at DG Oats, we'll be elaborating on a consistent quartz program. The quarterly quartz program will be elaborating on our meetup programs. We will be organizing community events to meet up with Bitcoin core days, like the Bitcoin Pizza Day in the next Bitcoin Pizza Day, the African Bitcoin Day, as well as other Bitcoin valuable days, a days that we can talk about block size, a days that we can talk about transactions. So we will continue to keep doing that as we've been doing regarding to zoning. Sometimes we've done meetups in the western part of the country. We've done meetup at the eastern part of the country, as well as the Federal Capital Territory as well. So we'll be extending intensively on this. We'll be fostering support for developers to like get themselves acquainted with Bitcoin technical programs, like the ones from BitTrust, like the ones from Chain Codes, as well as our beginners and onboarding process for them into like navigating their paths into different Bit devs. So this is what we'll be doing extensively at DG Oats this year. And we'll be automating our liquidity services and OTC process as well. And I'm very, very excited about what the year offers. Our consultation in terms of making available opportunities clear for investors and people who are willing to leverage the market is something we will also keep working on. And the good news is Bitcoin in Nigeria media program will now be featuring on multiple platforms, like the Fountain podcast platform. It's going to be featuring on Spotify. We're having the next edition on the 31st of January, which happens to be my birthday as well. So for me, the best way to celebrate the birthday is to like have that program keep going on. So we have amiable experts, industry stakeholders who are really insightful about finance at a time where the Nigeria economy is going through a lot. It's a dwindling economy right now. We need to like provide information and solutions available to the audience, and that's what we keep doing, sensitizing and extending the gospel of decentralization through Bitcoin, both on the media aspect, on the technical aspect, as well as the transactional aspect. So with this, I feel consistency and gradual contribution and collective collaboration from us as an ecosystem builder will get us to where we really want Nigeria to be in terms of economy and finance. And I must say Bitcoiners are great people, and I acknowledge that during my part in this space, it's been roller coaster, but with Bitcoin, I've been able to like navigate through a lot, keep getting more knowledge, as well as giving, sharing and brainstorming with people to like shape our path in solving African-centric problems. So this instrumental for me, and I will always tell people, spread the gospel of decentralization, focus on the price and not the price, because the price itself is Bitcoin. And on this note, I will say thanks for having me on your show, Frank. I'm Heritage Faladun, and I'm done speaking. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you. Perfectly put. I really appreciate the thoroughness of your responses. Thank you. It was a pleasure to have you on. Please, everybody, go and follow Heritage. And also, happy early birthday. 2 days away, I think. Yeah, so happy early birthday to you.
Wow, thanks, man.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Most my part, you know?
This was a great introduction to what's happening in Nigeria, what Heritage is doing there. I didn't mention it today, but he was awarded, I think it was the number 4 African Bitcoiner from the African Bitcoin Conference, the board of people who sort of selected this. So he's definitely being acknowledged for the work he's doing more and more. It's really important work. He really seems to be pushing the needle forward in terms of Bitcoin adoption in Nigeria. And again, you know, this stuff is really hard. It's hard to put yourself out there, to educate people, to help businesses facilitate certain transactions. This stuff, there's a lot of friction involved with this stuff from my very limited experience with it. And it takes people who are dedicated like Heritage to help widen this network, to help broaden this network, to help make more people use this asset that we all care so much about, this asset and network that we all care so much about. So, again, Heritage, thank you for having us on. I'm sure we will do this again. I hope we will cross paths at a conference this year, hopefully on the African continent. And we sincerely appreciate your time. Have a great day.
Yes, thanks, Frank. I mean, the conferences would have us meet again. Hope we don't get countries with visa restrictions like South Africa and all. But then it's going to be great. See you probably in Ghana or wherever the next African Bitcoin conference will be. Yeah, man.
Perfect. Excellent. Awesome. All right. Well, everybody, thanks for listening, and we'll talk soon.